where strategy gaming meets good vibes. No stress, just critical moves. Welcome everybody to the 10th episode of Critical Moves. Today we're going to be discussing the role of storytelling in strategy games, and I'm joined by Nuno.
Hello everyone.
As always, and Timothy.
Hey everyone, how are you doing?
I'm good, how about you?
Quite all right, ready to get into this.
Much happening in your world?
Oh, you know, playing strategy games, enjoying the new year, finally 2025.
Yeah, happy new year, everybody. Let's kick off. Tim, tell us, what's your earliest memory of being captivated by a story in a strategy game?
In a strategy game, to a lesser degree, probably something like StarCraft 1 and Brood War, but to a bigger degree, I would say Warcraft 3. I think that was like a really good sweet spot for a strategy game that had a very compelling story with rich characters that got me really invested in, oh, what's going to happen next? And that was a like really big motivator for me to click on play next scenario.
And I guess this is from the golden age, isn't it, where we had these excellent linear single-player campaigns with cutscenes and briefings and debriefings, and you could perhaps get involved in the story.
Well, you did ask me what my early memories were. I have some thoughts about more recent games that day as well, but back in the day, yeah, that a lot of big RTS games popped up with those big storylines, yeah.
Do you think we still see that today?
I think, it's a topic we've already discussed a couple of times, I would say, and I'm glad we're elaborating on it a bit. But we are seeing it just in different formats. It's not RTS anymore. It's a blend of different genres that are coming together.
No, you're very silent. It's not like you.
Oh, no, I was just thinking on how weird it is, because I was thinking about the question you asked Tim, but what's your earliest memory of a story that captivated you? And I was thinking that I don't have an answer for that, because so here's the thing. Tim speaks French, you speak English, and when I was a kid, I only spoke Portuguese, right? So there were not a lot of games that had their stories in Portuguese. So for me, I was just guessing. Even if I wanted to play the story, I couldn't, because I didn't understand what was going on. It's a very weird thing, because I was going back here in my brain and looking for an answer to that. And I came to the conclusion that only when I started speaking English do I remember playing games where I understood the story.
And I suppose that brings us to an interesting point. Are these campaigns, which can be very, very well done and very, very involved, are they just a vehicle for presenting a series of missions and scenarios? Does it really make any difference what the story is?
Yeah, currently I would say that you can find a mix of both. Some games use the story as a setting to set up challenges, right? So, but others they adapt the challenges to their story. So yeah, I think you can find both. But if the game is more grounded in history, you're probably more likely to see following the course of history. But if it's more kind of a fantastical kind of game, you'll probably see the opposite, which is you use the team to set up challenges. Yeah, I think that's actually a good question.
Nuno, did you play Age of Mythology growing up?
Oh yeah, I played the original Age of Mythology, but yeah, I didn't speak English back then.
Yeah, but so you played the retold recently, so that'd be interesting to know your difference between when you played then and when you played now, right? Did you like the story now?
Yeah, because back then I remember perfectly, because we were actually studying the Odyssey, which is tangentially related to Age mm-hmm. of Mythology. So there's a couple of characters that show up on both. Of course, not the main character and the Atlantis, but yeah, you get the idea. So you as a kid, what would you see was like, oh yeah, I remember reading about that, or I remember reading about that other character, and it's cool that they show up in here. Currently, after playing Age of Mythology Retold, you can appreciate a bit more of the story just because you actually understand mm-hmm. what's going on. You're not trying to guess up. And when the game had, I remember when the game had some sweeping changes. So when it went from, oh, now you're in ancient Greece and now you're in Egypt, and you're like, yeah, you knew that something happened, but you didn't understood what was going on. But yeah, going back now, yeah. So, of course, it makes perfect sense.
I had that a bit with Age of Empires 2. They also tried to be historical, and they gave you some historical characters and so on. But the storytelling it really wasn't there. It was very bland, very surface level. And I think that if you're doing story, a huge part of that has to be how you tell the story rather than what story you're telling.
Are you talking about Age of Empires 2?
Yeah,
the
yes.
original one? Oh, okay.
Yeah, Age of Empires 2, I think, there just wasn't much there for, like, a lot of resources for them to tell a story, right? It was just like, oh, we're you know, in this general area, and there's this character, and he's saying, like, oh, we're going to go there to do this, and that's about, like, it for the storytelling. And it's probably kind of difficult to do in an RTS setting.
And I guess that's the question. Do the stories really make any difference? My first memory of RTS games was Red Alert. And I remember watching the trailer where you see spoiler alerts for anybody who's not played the game from 1996, where Einstein goes back in time and shakes Hitler's hand and changes history as we know it. And that just really clicked with me because it was science fiction, it was time travel, it was war, it was just fantastic to see, and it was full FMV cutscenes, which I'd never seen before in a game, and it just really, really drew me in. Now, the story, I mean, let's be honest, the story is a bit shit, and remained so throughout Red Alert 2 and Red Alert 3. Very, very hammy when you get people like Tim Curry in and Yuri. I mean, these are not serious characters. It was just a fun slapstick, almost vehicle for a series of missions. But it hit, and it was strange because I remember playing the missions and not actually really caring about any of the characters, that were there. It made sense that they would come on, they would give you a briefing, a guy actually talking to you, telling you what you were going to go and do, and then you went and did it. And it just really worked for me.
So for me, we are now a quarter into the century, the 21st century. And yeah, we have new methods of making games, new and knowledge about how to make games. And I think we see that a lot in the new games that are coming out, that they are, like I mentioned earlier, blending together genres. And that allows for a strategic game, a game where you have to make, you know, important strategic decisions, and a very narrative-driven game at the same time. And I think it's incredibly interesting where... How often do people not talk? Oh, you know, if I was able to make decisions, I would be able to make the right ones and so on. But these games didn't really allow you to be put into that situation. And the strategic decisions that you make in real life, and that's what games imitate, right? Games imitate real life. They really... They're more than just a pure mathematical decision. They're more than just, oh, is A greater than B or not? It's about context. It's about relations. It's about all these added layers that I think drive a lot of power behind making these type of strategic decisions.
And I suppose you're right that things have changed. I mean, I guess initially it was a very, very linear process where, and that's perhaps because that's all they knew how to do when they start, when they first made strategy games. It was a case of, right, this is mission one. And of course you need to make things easier and at the start and build up the challenge as you go on. So you had a natural progression through a story. But I guess, is it really that important?
So, to me, the one place where it's probably makes the most sense to give up on narrative is when you go towards sandbox. Mm-hmm. If you go towards sandbox, you kind of have to go away from narrative because, I mean, you know, you're creating your own story in a way, but it's not really character driven because it could be any character and so on. So, if you're not going towards sandbox, I think you have little excuse to not put in a good narrative. It becomes a bit of a matter of laziness to not like put in the efforts to have a really nice story in your strategy game.
And I guess with those sandbox games, with games like Crusader Kings, Total War, Stellaris, these are games where you create your own narrative if you choose to do so. Yeah. You can either cheese the game. As you say, you pick the most powerful units to defeat the enemy as quickly as possible, or you play it as a role play.
Yeah.
You play a role. And I know that we have plans to talk about Stellaris in another episode, so I'll keep this light, but where you could choose to be a democratic crusader, or you can choose to be a xenophobic slaver, and you can stylize your play based upon the governing ethics that you take and tell your story in that way. And it harks back to that episode we had about morality. You know, these games allow you to put your morals aside and play as the bad guy and have a thoroughly enjoyable time doing so.
Yeah, I think for me personally, those are the kind of games that I enjoy the most. Probably because I like I said, I grew up used to not paying a lot of attention to this, to the story of a title. So I eventually just started making up my own. And I think that, like you said, I enjoy games that let me have let me make my own fun. And since I love, historical ground titles, like the story is already predetermined for you, right? So you can't make a lot of changes if you're gonna be super strict with the way a campaign goes. But if a game lets you loose on a setting like Crusader Kings does, it just says, oh, okay, so you want to be a medieval count, just go ahead and here are the tools of your sandbox and just have fun with it. I think that's where the most memorable stories come out for me. Because I can remember a lot of really small, stupid moments that happened on that game. But, for example, I can't remember. I recently played Age of Empires 4, and that's an historical a historical title, quote-unquote. But and I can't remember the a lot of the main campaign's progression. But I can remember the time when I was an Iberian count and I managed to kill two kings at once. So yeah, this is not the kind of games that really put a smile on my face because they just set you loose on a time scale or on a place and they just say, oh, okay, go have some fun. And I think those create some of the best memorable moments in gaming, at least for me.
So with that, you're telling your own story.
I think you're telling a story alongside the game, right? Because like, you can only control so much. So what you're doing is that you're just role-playing your role on that world. And it just so happens that you're playing a strategy game.
Yeah. And this is the thing. If you look at the linear style of campaign... Now, Supreme Commander, as an example, wasn't a brilliant campaign, but it was there, and there were certain memorable parts where you could tell they were trying to elicit an emotional response. There's a couple of missions where you get to know quite superficially a couple of characters because they're the ones that hold your hand through the initial missions, Dostier for the Cybran and Commander Arnold for the EDF. And then maybe a third of the way through the campaign, these, spoiler alert, these characters are killed. And it's almost as if they're trying to get you to have an emotional connection to the loss of these characters, which is incredibly difficult to do in a strategy game, because even if you, well, you don't have any choice. If you fail that mission, you can't proceed. So you don't get to explore the story in any other way other than what they have set.
Yeah, and I also think that strategy isn't the best genre to tell a story, just because you are so distant, most of the times at least, you're so distant from your playable characters, right? So even on a physical aspect, like, can you in most of the games, can you see your hero unit from afar? Like, other than maybe Warcraft 3 or in the recent Total War, I don't think you can. And like you said, it's very hard to care for something that, well, if you lose it, you just have to replay it again and need to try it again. And I think that's why games like XCOM and Crusader Kings are so beloved. It's just because they allowed you to create your own character. And you have a proximity to it, right? Because if you're playing with three or four characters, like, you can physically see them on the battlefield, and you know what each one of them is doing, and if they have like individual skills that you leveled up and you took care of them, and now they're individual pieces and very important pieces for your strategy, you start to care for them. And if you lose them, that's heartbreaking, not for the game or for the other characters, but for you. So this is the kind of connection that I think RTS is on a larger scale really miss. So, for example, I love Company of Heroes, but if you ask me about a single main character about Company of Heroes, I couldn't tell you. I don't even know if they existed. If you're following someone, I have no idea.
So, one game that is an exception to everything you mentioned here is Suzerain. It's a purely story-driven strategy game. And what it does so splendidly is that you mentioned, oh, you have, you know, these characters that you care for, but there's no relation. There's no action and reaction. It's all scripted. When you mentioned those RTS games and that's what traditional has happened. But in Suzerain, it is about these relations, and you act, they react to that. You can have a reaction to their reaction, have multiple choices and so on. And it becomes about strategically going through these relations and using these relations to your advantage and making use of resources and so on. So I find that absolutely fascinating, and that it is absolutely possible to do that. Now, it's a lot harder in something like an RTS game, but it's also not something that's pursued a lot in RTS. It's not, I mean, how often do you have a choice in an RTS on what you do within the story? You sometimes have like a very small choice, but it's rarely consequential, and I think that's something that's lacking.
I think it is very rare. Now, having not really enjoyed Blizzard, the Blizzard games. Is it in StarCraft 2 where you have some choices around what particular path you take in the missions?
Some, but not extremely meaningful. You're not going to change the end of the game.
No, of course not. Because if you don't pass a mission, you can't progress with the story. And I think that's the situation where we're talking about the drawbacks of these linear campaigns compared to your more emergent storytelling. But from an RTS perspective, one game which I thought did narrative really, really well was Dawn of War. The original Dawn of War was so immersed in the lore of 40K that now you can get Blood Ravens armies, Blood Ravens characters that you can buy. I'm sure there's Blood Ravens books as well. So it was a game faction, a video game faction, which made its way onto the tabletop. And is it easier, would be my question to both of you, is it easier to tell a story with an established lore like 40K, like, for example, Star Wars, than it is by building your own?
Yes. I would say so.
Thank you for the answer.
Yeah, I think,
Next question.
I think it depends a lot on the setting, right? But if you're talking about Warhammer and Star Wars, I think it's a lot easier just because you are already familiar with the setting and you might be curious as to what the game is going to explore next or if it's going to be interesting. And I think that especially in a setting like Warhammer 40K, where everything is so, I think, nebulous, right? So you really don't know a lot about what's going on. You're never really sure where the game is taking place, or like, you know you're in a 40K setting, but if you don't know it's this on a specific time period, right? So I think setting a game on those settings it can almost be equated to cheating, right? Because unless you're really bad at creating your own stories, which, given recently video games have been proving that they can fuck this one up. But I think, like, if you're gonna set something on Warhammer 40K, you have already a lot of work cut out for you because the setting is just so amazing.
You have your work cut out for you, but you also have a huge advantage because there's already such a huge amount of material that you can use there. Not just we mentioned Dawn of War, but also Battlefleet Gothic Armada. These games are taking place within established stories within the lore. And if your story already exists and all you're doing is putting your game into a small section of that, then you overcome the need to create your own story.
You don't have to create your own setting or your own world. And a lot of the people that are going to play that are somewhat familiar with the lore and they know what's going on and they can understand references. So yeah, I think a lot of work is already done for you, and probably the most important part of the work, which is the world building. And I think most games really don't do strategy games, I mean, don't do world building all that well.
Well, I imagine the average person thinks that they want to create a video game and they settle on, oh, I want a really rich story with really relatable characters and well-written, rich characters with story arcs and so on. And then they're thinking about what kind of game they're going to make. Probably not a lot of them are going to end up in the strategy genre, right? So probably that there's a lot of people making strategy games thinking about the engine, about how it's going to work, and spending more time and effort on that and less on the storytelling. That being said, one game that made its own story with its own world, Terra Invicta, I really, really appreciate it because playing the game feels like discovering the story. It feels like discovering what's happening next, and you don't know what's going to happen. And the smallest spoiler that I will give that's like very self-evident in the game, but I would recommend not reading more about the story and when you're trying to play it, is that there are aliens. So you're playing in the today's world and there are aliens. And I feel like a big part of the game is discovering the relation with the aliens, discovering the story that's happening and so on. And you're kind of unfolding a mystery. You're playing a bit of a detective, even though it's like a completely a strategy game. You're playing a bit of a detective of like what's happening here. And that's very, very fun to play for me.
But it isn't linear, is it?
So no, it is a sandbox, which is kind of impressive. Mm-hmm. But I guess what the aliens do is kind of linear, but what you do, you're up to do, you're free to do what you feel like doing.
So can you perhaps rewrite the intended story with your actions?
Yes, not really. You get to choose in the beginning which kind of stands you take, and then you're kind of fixed on that path. Mm-hmm. But how you get there, I guess, is up to you.
Yeah, I have a question for you both. Have you guys ever played a dynamic campaign on any other game? So a game where you take your small section of forces and you take them all towards a 20-long mission campaign. Have you guys ever played a game like that?
I need more information. What do you mean?
So yeah, that's because this is something that
explain yourself.
I will. Yeah, so for example, I'm going to a bit on a wargaming rant here, because like in most wargames, I wouldn't say most, but in some wargames you have a dynamic campaign, and not on the sense of Total War and Crusaders Kings and all that, but what you have is you start the game, you know, or you start a campaign. Let's say you're set in World War II and you're taking the 101st Infantry Division into the Normandy campaign, right? So you're gonna play the Normandy campaign. There's 20 missions, and what you do is that you start with 150 men, and you have only 150 men to do those 20 missions. And every time you lose one, it's done for good, right? So he doesn't show up again, and he doesn't revive. He's dead. And I think this kind of... There's a lot of games that do that, at least war games. And I think this might be a very interesting way to also create emergent storytelling moments, because you really get attached to your guys because you don't want them to die, right? So because you can soft lock yourself out of winning the campaign, because you can you can go to a point where if you have 150 guys and if 50 of them die in the first mission, the chances that you're gonna end up finishing the campaign are very low. So I was just curious to know if you guys ever played the game like that, or if you have ever come across something like this. Because if you haven't, I think maybe trying a couple of war games, and for example, combat mission titles, I think might be a cool experience for you.
Sure, I have, but I think it's something completely different from character-driven stories, where you're wondering about individuals' motivations, where characters have room for growth, personal growth, where they change when they make decisions, and where you have interactions with them as well. And I think that, yeah, a lot of times strategy steers away from that. And I get why, for the reasons mentioned earlier, and also just the focus of what you're doing. If you're having your free time, maybe you do want to focus on, you know, purely the strategic part and you know, making calculations, and that's perfectly fine. I just also enjoy when there is that closer approach, and there's the combination of the two, I suppose.
I've got a really, really good example of how storytelling is done well, and it goes back a long time to a game called Star Wars Rebellion, or it was Star Wars Supremacy in the UK. It's set just after the Battle of Yavin, so just after Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. And it allows you to either play as the Rebels or play as the Empire and rewrite the entire Star Wars story right through Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. It's got all of the characters that you would expect to see. So you've got Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader, the Emperor, Princess Leia, Han Solo. They're all there. And you can tell your own Star Wars story in what is quite a basic-looking strategy game. And they've included parts in that game which you saw in the movies. So, for example, in Empire Strikes Back, where Luke goes to Dagobah to train with Yoda to become a Jedi. Within Star Wars Rebellion, at some point, Luke disappears and goes off, and he comes back as a different character. He comes back as not as a farm boy, but he comes back as a Jedi. And then as he goes on missions, he grows stronger. And you do get to care about these characters because, you know, then there's some minor characters as well that come in there. And you do get to care about them because of their effectiveness and because they've been through things and seen things. And you control that. It's a very old game, but it's really, really good. One of my favorites.
Now I want to play it.
Yeah,
I think that's super. Like, it just opened up a whole new perspective I didn't have on game. Because, I was imagining, like, going back to Warhammer, imagine if you set a game. So, the Horus Rebellion is just starting. Okay? Here are your characters. Make it happen. And then you can tell your story from there instead of just oh, okay, the Horde of Rebellion just handed and now you have to deal with the repercussions of it. No, just like this put you on a very important moment on the lore, and you can make your own story from there or at the start of that moment. I think that's a really cool idea.
And you can get it on GOG.com as well, and it's only a couple of dollars. It's struggles sometimes with modern hardware, but it's really, really good, and it's worth a couple of hours to play through. And say very, very basic, but worth doing.
Guys, I have a question for you. So Timo was talking about how it can be hard to tell stories on strategy games. Do you think that's maybe because a lot of the players are more mechanics oriented and not story oriented kind of guys? Because like in previous podcasts we talked about mechanics and all that, so just curious.
I would say to some degree, yeah, of course, and we have seen this. We talked also about the splitting up of RTS into different genres and people going different ways and so on. And I mean, yeah, people who play chess, they're not so interested in character development, probably. Or if they are, they're not like nurturing that true chess. And they're playing chess specifically for the purely strategic part.
Strategy games are not marketed on come and enjoy this fantastic story, are they? They're marketed on the mechanics, on the systems, on the maps. Not on, we're going to take you through a cracking narrative, which you're going to thoroughly enjoy. There's lots of games which launch now without a narrative campaign, without a single-player campaign, Sins of a Solar Empire 2.
Yeah, boo.
So let's say you have...
make you pay for the campaign.
So let's say you have a game, you have a strategy game, and you're ready to create a campaign for that game. Well, I mean... what's stopping you from investing a bit more and creating that really nice narrative-driven campaign? I mean, you might as well just put in the extra effort. You've already created this hopefully beautiful game that plays really well, and then you can add a campaign to that, and you can invest a little bit more and then create something really enjoyable for even more people without subtracting anything, I think.
Because the campaign's got to be good. It can't be boring.
Yeah.
In order to have a good campaign, you need to have story writers. You need to have lore writers. Yeah. You've got to have people who, you have to pay for talent, essentially. You can't just say, mission one, go and defeat that base. Mission two, defeat this base. Because no one's interested in that. That's boring.
Right. But there's already people making stories, and they're looking for a place, a vessel to put in their story. So if you already have a game and you're looking for a story, surely you can find, putting two and two together, right?
Go tell that to the most recent Star Wars series, where you have, like, woke activists writing their stories and try to fit them into Star Wars setting. But, yeah, talk for another day. But I agree with Al here, because that's what happened with early strategy titles like Age of Empires. That's Age of Empires... needed to have a campaign or a couple of campaigns, and what they were just really basic because the mechanics of the game weren't built to support large medieval battles or individual. Like, I remember that the first campaign I played was from El Cid, and you're supposed to follow him through a series of missions, but the game wasn't designed to like be focused on a single character, right? So what's the point? Yeah, he looks a bit different, but other than that, I guess it's just Age of Empires, but with a cool sprite on a guy.
But those early games needed to have a narrative. They needed to have a single player campaign because they didn't have as much multiplayer. Multiplayer was not the focus.
No.
And you look at games like Beyond Our Reason, it's... there is no campaign, is there? I mean, I appreciate it's been around for a long time.
Well, it's not out yet. That's it. And
well, it's been out for 20 years.
the campaign is something.
How long does something stay in early access for? You know, it's.
Well, until it says that it's released. There's a Steam roadmap, and there is a plan for a campaign, and I think it's incredibly important for the release of the game as well, because, like you mentioned, there's a very large amount of people that are simply not interested in multiplayer at all. They will only play the single player part, and then when you have this campaign, and you're ready to put out this game, and the story is not there, all those people who don't care about multiplayer and so on, they're going to start the campaign and be like, yeah, actually, I'm not very interested in this, and then just drop it.
This is the thing. So Beyond Our Reason is based on Total Annihilation. If Total Annihilation didn't have the story of the arm and the core and the infinite war, the game never would have sold.
Well, actually, it was a big criticism of Total Annihilation that it didn't have much story. And I found that actually really interesting. So Total Annihilation was criticized very heavily for being very small on story, and people, it sold really well, and it did really well. It was a really good game. It was focused more on the mechanic. And I mean, if you look at the story, you read about it now, it's like, okay, it's very surface level stuff. And
it is.
They took Cave Dog, took that criticism to heart, and they created a sequel, Total Annihilation Kingdoms. And the story there is actually really good. And there's a narrator that guides you through the missions. There's like a huge amount of lore and story behind it and everything like that. Unfortunately, the mechanics were less than great. And actually, Total Annihilation Kingdoms is kind of part of the reason why Cave Dog went under, because they invested so much in it and it turned out not that great.
So this takes us back to a point we're making at the start. Is the campaign in some of these games just a vehicle to present a series of missions where they can show off the mechanics?
Depends on your personal preference.
I think so, sometimes, yeah.
Depends on your personal preference, probably.
No, but I think what Al is asking is that if the campaign is just set dressing for the mechanics of the game, and I think you're going to find examples of both, right? So you're going to have games where you're building the mechanics around the setting, and then you're going to have games where the setting dictates, not the setting, but so you have a set core of mechanics, and then you just put some fancy lipstick on it and just call it a day. So I think that you, earlier, like in the early 2000s and late 90s RTS, what you had was a solid set of mechanics most of the time, but then the very ham-fisted campaigns. And I think, like, I love Age of Empires 2. I love the game to death, but yeah, the campaigns were really forced, and they make no sense. If you go and you play them, that you can have better experiences with Total War, you can have better experiences with Field of Glory and all other games that do medieval history so much better and so much more interesting. But there are other games where they build the mechanics around the story or around the setting of the game. And I think those are the games that are mostly or exclusively single player focused. I'm thinking about something here like Homeworld. I don't think we have talked about Homeworld, right? It's a game that does like it's highly praised for its incredible story and its interesting lore and the way the mechanics and the story all come together. Because like the biggest revolution of Homeworld was the kind of 3D controlling of your units, like on space. And it's a game that just makes sense. And you can see that the game was built around its story. And the game is single player only, right? I haven't played Homeworld 3.
You say that, but what could you not do in Age of Empires 2 that you could do in Homeworld that makes Homeworld be able to have such a rich story and not in Age of Empires?
There's just a disconnect. There's just a disconnect between the story you're trying to tell and the way the game is presenting it. So like I said, if you're going to follow Joan of Arc, I think you don't expect Joan of Arc to be. I can't remember the sprite of Joan of Arc in the game, but I think it was a scout.
She had two different ones. One, she was like a woman in like ragged clothes, and the other one, she was on a horse, an armored horse.
Yeah, but she was like a villager, right? But yeah, yeah. Example. Okay, if you're gonna do something like that,
In Homeworld, you don't have something so spectacular that is able to tell you so much richer of a story through its mechanics.
No, but it fits the theme. The mechanics fit the theme, which is space combat, and you have your very contained number of ships, and your fleet is very limited, and you're always fighting off. Like the story and the missions you have just make sense because. You're trying to escape and reach your destination, so you're gonna find hardships and you're gonna have to fight your way until there. And the game does this really well, so it wouldn't make sense if, for example, Homeworld had something like, oh, now you're gonna play tower defense in here, or now you have to stop here and build walls in space just because we think you should. So that's something that Age of Empires did, and doesn't make a lot of sense. And I'm recalling having played, I think it was the Battle of Toro in Age of Empires 2 Definitive Edition, and that it's just stupid, right? So if you know anything about history, you know that the battle didn't play like that. The scale was off. Everything is off, so it doesn't make sense.
How much effort did they put into the story of Age of Empires?
Oh, I really don't care about the effort. I just care about the final product because I'm paying for something, right?
I know, but my argument is that they could have done something really nice, and they just didn't put much effort into it. And that's the basis of my whole argument, is that if you're going to have this huge game like Age of Empires 2, you might as well put in the extra effort to create this very rich narrative-driven story.
And is it not quite interesting that, because you talk about Age of Empires 2, and I'm sure we've said in previous episodes, it's one of the most played strategy games mm-hmm. currently, and it's ancient, mm-hmm. almost as old as me. It's not, but you know, it is ancient.
It is.
So is the longevity of these games based upon a multiplayer component?
Because
the initial sale of these games, if you look at how popular Homeworld was when it was released in 1999, the initial sale of these games, they're being sold on the strength of their single player campaign. Mm-hmm. Now, I read something recently where it said that 80% of RTS gamers, so just ignoring the other types of strategy games, 80% of RTS gamers class themselves as casual. Mm-hmm. They want to buy a game to enjoy a campaign experience, to explore the mechanics in a controlled way. Absolutely. Through a campaign, not to get involved in multiplayer.
Absolutely.
And is it therefore a mistake for a game to launch now without a single player component, a narrative campaign?
And that is why Beyond All Reason is not launched.
It hasn't launched on Steam, but.
Yeah, but that's exactly the point.
It launched 20 years ago.
No, but that's exactly the whole point. It's like that you're absolutely right in that. Is that. The vast majority of strategy gamers play single player. Even when you look at Paradox games and most other strategy games, it's almost all single player. Then you do need a very solid single player game before you release. And the most obvious way is to do a campaign, clearly. I guess Paradox games don't really have campaign as you would imagine a campaign to be, but yeah, if you're making an RTS game and you're looking to release, I think it'd be a huge mistake not to invest into making a big, nice, compelling story in your campaign.
Yeah, and I think we shouldn't get confused or mixed up the idea that you can have a very successful product that doesn't last for very long. And you can have a product that doesn't sell all that well, but has a very long life cycle. And I think a game that did that great, I'm just going to step to a bit here out of strategy game, but for example, Rainbow Six Siege for Ubisoft, Rainbow Six Siege launched like 8 years ago or something, and the initial reaction to it was very mild and people didn't enjoy it a lot, but the game has grown since then and has become very successful, and it's not because of its single player campaign. And I think that we shouldn't mix these two things, because like you said, Homeworld was a very successful title and it had it was only single player, and Age of Empires is still a very successful title, but it has a longer longevity just because I think it was built with multiplayer in mind. So in fact, the people that are sustaining it right now are just a fraction. Maybe those, like you said, like I think it was 40%, right? I wouldn't say even 40%. Maybe like 5% of the people that bought the game are the ones sustaining it, or are the average players online right now. So I don't think those two go necessarily hand in hand together. Because we have a lot of older titles that have like a community of 20 to 30 people still playing them. And for some reason, those people really enjoy that game and they keep it alive.
They keep it alive, but are they sustaining it? And this comes back to when you mention success. You know, how do we measure success? Mm. Now, games companies are there to make money. Let's make no bones about it. Their success is based upon their initial sales. It's on people buying the games, not on people buying a game in 1999 and still playing it in 2025. It's based upon being able to sell copies.
Yeah.
That's how the companies make their money. That's how they move on to create their sequels and their next titles. So having a core group sustain a title, for a couple of decades is not a measure of success?
I don't know, to be
honest.
Or
is it?
I really don't know, because like, if you're going to define your success by your sales figures, I would say that if you're not selling, then if you're not selling after 10 years of releasing your game, but people are still playing it, I mean, yeah, it left a mark, right? And people enjoy that franchise, and you might capitalize on it later. But mm-hmm. You're probably not selling as many copies as you were on the release day, but that's why that goes hand in hand with what I was saying, is that, yeah, you can release a game that has a massive peak. I might be wrong in this, but I think I'm not. Let's say, remember, guys, we talked about how Manor Lords was a really interesting game. Like, that game mm-hmm. sold, I think it was 3 million copies. Yep. On its release window, and how many people are playing it right now? Maybe 10,000 to 20,000 at the moment. So yeah, so the game was a success, and there's still a very active community playing it. But are you gonna measure its longevity and success based on how many people are playing it right now? How many people sold it? I don't know.
Well, I guess Slavic Magic would say that success is the amount of money he made from the initial sales.
Now, yeah, I think
this,
so.
This is another interesting point when we talk about people sustaining games. If you look at Paradox and their DLC strategy, this is a way that they maintain a persistent income by slow drip feeding DLCs into the market, and that's how you sustain a game.
So
releasing a game in 1999, which is still played in 2025, isn't a measure of success.
That's their business model. They built a company uh-huh. around that, and it works for them because they built a core audience. I mean, it worked for them because they recently announced that they had lost about 90% of their how do you say, I don't know how to say it in English, but the cash they made, I think they lost a lot of money recently because the model is starting to see some cracks in it, because people are no longer willing, because it's one thing if you played Europa Universalis 4 when it came out, it was a really good game on its own, but I would say that if Europa Universalis 5 came out today, it's probably going to be stripped of a lot of features. And I think that's what making people start to look at Paradox with a lot of discontent, and they're failing. They're failing hard right now. Like 2024 was their worst year ever.
So I think we've drifted a bit away from the topic of storytelling in video games when we're talking about how much money they're making. I think if I were ever to become a writer and try to tell a story, I would measure my success in how many people have moved or like the impact I've had on individuals rather than on how much money I've made. But that's maybe just me and might explain why I'm not splendidly rich right now. That being
that's
said,
that's Tim the romantic, isn't it?
I suppose so. Just to conclude, I guess for me is just if you're making a strategy game, just consider you might want to put in a really compelling story on it, because 9 times out of 10 it doesn't take away anything from the strategy itself, and it can add a lot to it. That's all.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One more thing, and then we'll consider wrapping this up. So is one of the reasons why strategy games don't do as well as other games because they don't do stories very well? I mean, gaming is a multi-billion dollar industry, and stories sell games. You look at movies. Movies are just stories. Stories sell games. And it's very difficult to market a complex mechanic, very easy to market a gripping narrative. Is this the reason why strategy games are not as popular?
Well, it's about how many people are there with what kind of preference, right? And I think there's a natural preference for some people to, like, you know, tinker in their brain and like try to come up with a solution to a difficult, complex strategic problem. And obviously not everyone is interested in that. Some people find that excruciatingly boring to do something like that. And so we're in a minority probably that enjoy that. And a vocal minority, I would say, because I think people are passionate about that, showed that greatly. And I think that that's a bit what we're doing here, I suppose. And I think that's okay. We don't have to be the biggest genre out there. And that's never going to happen, I think. That's not the makeup of the population of gamers and humans even.
Mm-hmm. Nuno, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think that, like, there's a lot more people play strategy games than we actually give it credit for. So I really don't think that that's the case. I think that there's it's just an example, like the announcement of Civilization 7 was a massive event, right? So people were super excited about it. They were talking online about it. And I'm actually surprised to how well a game like Sea Power, Naval Combat in the Missile Age is being received online, because you can look at videos of that on YouTube and there's hundreds of thousands of views on videos. And I'm surprised to how many people
that's
are actually
peanuts,
interested
though.
In this, and we sometimes just don't give it enough credit. And I sincerely think that we're currently living on a golden age of strategy games. I was writing a list today for some of the best upcoming games in 2025, and I was surprised to just how many city building games exist right now or are coming out in 2025. And I was like, damn, there's gotta be a really big market here, because you have games about everything. You have games about, you can set up your own museum, you can be your own Hollywood studio production, you can be in ancient Egypt, you can be in space, you can be in Rome, you can do, you can have like, you even have God games now, which is something that had been extinct for years and they're coming out today. So I think sometimes we don't give enough credit to the amount of people that play strategy games. Maybe just the fact that these don't make up like the massive audience that studios are looking for. So there's a clear divide between, yeah, sure, your game sold 1 million copies and a game that sold 10 million copies. But I think a lot of people play strategy games, and they do it for several reasons, both for multiplayer and both for single player. And like you said, like that number you pulled out, I think most of people play it for single player reasons and not for multiplayer. And I'm the kind of guy, I never played a strategy game online ever, because I really don't like the... I just like to... So I'm the kind of guy that enjoys exploring like the mechanics, and I enjoy trying new stuff out, and I don't want to be metagaming a strategy game, because it removes the... For me, it removes the essence of experimentation when you have to... Well, if you either do this, or you're going to lose, and that for me, just it's not fun.
And you don't like the story either.
And I don't have the story either, but now I can read English, so yeah, I can enjoy stories a lot better now than I could when I was a kid.
If you still play strategy games like we do, by all means, come and tell us about it. If you go to criticalmovespodcast.com, you'll see all of the ways you can get in touch. Thanks very much. Happy New Year, and I'll see you guys soon.